headlines, supporters and opponents of the Tunisian president clashed with each other following his decision to freeze parliament and dismiss the government. The UN warns that Afghanistan could see the largest number of civilian deaths in more than a decade if the Taliban's nationwide offensives are not halted. Also in the headlines, China calls on the U.S. to stop blaming Beijing for its own structural problems as the two countries hold high-level talks. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Supporters and opponents of the Tunisian President Kais Saied clashed outside of parliament amid a political crisis in the African nation. The clashes took place after proponents of the ruling Ennahda party and advocates of the president gathered in front of parliament. The unrest was sparked by Saied's decision to dismiss Prime Minister Hichem Mechichi and suspend parliament. Afterwards, the army blocked Parliament Speaker Rashid Ghannouchi from entering the legislative body's building, who led a sit-in there. The upheaval follows violent protests in several cities across Tunisia. Demonstrations were held over the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and the economy. Abiyomi Azikiwi, an editor with the Pan-African Newswire, says protests in Tunisia have been provoked by the dire economic situation, which is the result of the coronavirus pandemic.
First of all, economic situation that is dire. Tunisia was heavily dependent upon tourism, and since the COVID-19 pandemic has had a tremendous impact on Europe during 2020 and even in 2021, this has cut back tremendously on the amount of foreign exchange that they have access to. The Ennahda party, which is a moderate Islamist party, has the largest number of deputies within the parliament, and Rashid Ghannouchi is the head and speaker of the party. So they are, in fact, against what President Kais Saied is doing. Saied has more of a secular background, academic background, and at the same time, he was supported by the Ennahda party, but he also had a lot of support among young people inside the country as well. So I think the president is attempting to quell the demonstrations by firing the prime minister, Mechichi, and also suspending the parliament.
The United Nations warns of unprecedented civilian casualties in Afghanistan in over a decade if the Taliban does not halt its offensive across the country. The UN Assistance Mission said the stepped-up violence that began in early May has had a devastating impact on civilians. According to the mission, over 1,600 Afghan civilians were killed and another 3,200 injured in the first half of 2021. It says nearly half of all civilian casualties are children. The Taliban have captured half of Afghanistan's districts and border crossings, while several provincial capitals are under their siege. The militants deny having deliberately caused civilian casualties anywhere, despite killings being documented by Afghan security forces and rights groups. A high-ranking Chinese diplomat has called on the U.S. to stop demonizing Beijing and blaming China for its own structural problems. China's Vice Foreign Minister Xi Feng made the remark during a meeting with the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman in the Chinese city of Tianjin. Feng said some people in the U.S. view China as, quote, imaginary enemy. He said this is the main cause of tensions between the two countries. Sherman arrived in Tianjin on Sunday for the second diplomatic meeting between Washington and Beijing under President Joe Biden's administration. The first meeting in March ended without any progress. Beijing-Washington relations have deteriorated since then with a series of tit-for-tat sanctions and diplomatic barbs. Commentator Fabrizio Goldoni says it is the U.S. strategy to create enemies to push forward its hybrid warfare across the world.
We have to put in context the point that demonizing China, they help in internal affairs because they are creating an enemy, okay? Mm. So basically they already created two enemies. They create Russia first as enemy, and now they reinforce the creation of a second enemy, that is China. This is very important for their purpose of following an hybrid warfare.
Lebanon is set to designate a new prime minister amid deepening political and economic turmoil. President Michel Aoun has held a brief meeting with the former premier, Najib Mikati, in Beirut. The leading businessman has already secured the backing of three former prime ministers, including Saeed Hariri, for the post. Resistance movement Hezbollah has reportedly endorsed Mikati to form a new government. The 65-year-old politician is expected to receive the support of a majority of parliamentarians to lead the crisis-hit nation for the third time. Lebanon has been run by a caretaker administration since August of last year. That is when the government resigned in the aftermath of a devastating explosion in the Beirut port. The political crisis has exacerbated its economic loss. Top U.S. infectious disease official Anthony Fauci has warned the U.S. is headed in the wrong direction in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Fauci says the U.S. is in an unnecessarily difficult situation due to increasing cases of infection. He says the hike is being fueled by unvaccinated Americans and the spread of the Delta variant of the coronavirus. The expert says that the government may ask those vaccinated to wear masks and recommend that booster shots might be needed. More than 163 million people, or 49% of the total U.S. population, are fully vaccinated. However, infections are soaring, especially in states with lower vaccination rates. Florida, Texas, and Missouri account for 40% of all new cases nationwide. Ebola has reported nearly 32,000 new coronavirus infections, the highest tally since the pandemic began. The Ivanian Health Ministry set the new figure, pushes the country's total caseload to more than 3.7 million. It said 322 people also succumbed to the disease, raising the overall death toll to over 89,000. Nearly 5,000 COVID patients are currently in intensive care units across the country. Iran has been grappling with a new surge in infections and deaths over the past weeks. The uptick is largely blamed on the highly contagious Delta strain. Over 230 cities are now designated as red, the highest category on Iran's coronavirus risk scale. The country's COVID-19 task force has implemented restrictions in those cities to curb the spread of the virus. Thousands of people across the world have taken to the streets to protest against anti-COVID measures as governments have ramped up pressure on the unvaccinated. Mandating health passes and COVID-19 jabs have fueled public anger as people believe such policies curtail freedom.
Tens of thousands of people in France, the UK, Italy, and Greece protested against coronavirus restrictions and mandatory vaccination policies, sparking clashes with police forces. The European governments tried to force more unvaccinated people to receive their coronavirus shots by using sanctions. In France, nearly 160,000 people held nationwide protests against the implementation of a health pass by President Emmanuel Macron's government. Demonstrators slammed this policy by saying it's an attack on their liberty. Macron's health pass will ban access to restaurants and public spaces for unvaccinated people. During the rallies, tensions flared up as French anti-riot police fired tear gas toward protesters and used water cannons to disperse them. Several demonstrators have also been arrested. Elsewhere in Europe, thousands of Italians took to the streets of Rome, Naples, and Turin against the government's introduction of restrictions on unvaccinated people. Protesters chanted slogans such as "Freedom" and "Down with the dictatorship" over plans for a government certificate known as the Green Pass. The Green Pass is an extension of the EU's digital COVID certificate and will be required from August 6th to enter cinemas, museums, indoor swimming pools, or sports stadiums, or eat indoors at restaurants. Thousands of people have also protested in London against what they describe as an erosion of their civil liberties. Demonstrators denounced the UK government's track and trace app, saying it limits their movements. Over 600,000 people are told to self-isolate in 1 week alone this month. The protests come a week after most coronavirus restrictions in England were lifted. Police used tear gas and water cannon to disperse more than 4,000 people who had gathered in central Athens to protest against mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. Police sources claim that some protesters had thrown petrol bombs, prompting the police to respond with tear gas.
Certainly the lockdowns are making people unhappy. They're driving up unemployment. They're adding to general restlessness. But the problem is broader. I mean, I think people are upset about the poor economy, which is and slow economic growth, which is now in its 13th or 14th year.
Public anger is focused on two areas: the government's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, and then how people are tired of being under a lockdown. For example, in Brazil, there were scenes of clashes between demonstrators and security forces. Brazilians demanded the impeachment of President Jair Bolsonaro due to his handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
Tens of thousands of Brazilians took to the streets and called for the impeachment of President Bolsonaro, who is facing increasing pressure as the pandemic exacts a devastating toll. The South American nation has been grappling with the world's second deadliest outbreak after the United States, with over 500,000 deaths. Demonstrators and police scuffled in Sao Paulo, with the smoke rising from tear gas canisters and flashbangs exploding. Bolsonaro has seen his popularity declining amid a Senate probe into corruption scandals tied to the purchase of COVID-19 vaccines. His approval rating is at a low record of 24%. Bolsonaro has been famously dismissive of the health crisis, the need to wear face masks, and lockdown measures to halt the spread of the virus. In Australia, protesters carried signs and banners reading, "Wake up Australia," and "Drain the Swamp." Demonstrators defied a month-long stay-at-home order by participating in the unauthorized march in Sydney. Nearly 60 attendees were arrested. Demonstrators clashed with police officers and threw projectiles at them. Authorities suggested that the COVID-related restrictions could remain in place until October.
People have lost faith in the political classes. They don't believe that the politicians in charge know what they're doing, and they are quite angry and upset.
In many countries, anti-lockdown anger has merged with other grievances. Demonstrators criticize governments for suspending their right to protest because of the public health crisis. In addition, economic hardship and anxiety have further fueled public anger.
We're going to go to our Afghan story and talk to our correspondent, Amin Alami, who joins us from Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. Well, Amin, a very depressing piece of news, obviously, for Afghanistan, who's experienced so many deaths, especially recently, that a report was issued citing some numbers. Can you please tell us more about that?
According to the media report released by the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, UNAMAR, at least the number of 5,183 civilians were killed, and this number shows a 47% increase comparing to the same period in 2020. The report issued by UNAMA also says that Afghanistan and its people will face or will experience very difficult days and bloody days if the Taliban continue to launch more attacks across this country. This comes while both sides, I mean the Taliban and the Afghan government, blame each other for targeting civilians and killing innocent civilians during their military operations. For instance, the Afghan government says that the Taliban misuse residential areas and civilians themselves as human shields against Afghan military operations in various parts of Afghanistan, especially in Ghazni province, that is under the that is also considered as a besieged city in southern Afghanistan. Local officials, as well as military officials here in Afghanistan's defense ministry, say that the Taliban have entered to houses of many residents of the city of Ghazni and the suburbs of this city, and they are trying to target Afghan security forces who are patrolling on the roads and the streets of this city in southern Afghanistan. But the Taliban also blame the Afghan government for targeting civilians. For instance, they say that the Afghan Air Force have repeatedly targeted residential areas, mosques and schools, and even religious madrasas that have resulted to killing of high numbers of civilians. Again, Afghan security forces reject such claim by the Taliban, saying that given the Taliban are using residential areas and civilians as human shields against Afghan security forces, we cannot say that Afghan civilians do not lose their lives as a result of military operations conducted by Afghan security forces here. But apart from rising civilian casualties in Afghanistan as a result of rising bloodshed and insecurity in this country, thousands of Afghan civilians have been displaced mainly over the past 2 months in Afghanistan. Since the Taliban has stepped up their attacks along with the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan, thousands of villagers, especially in Ghazni, Kandahar, Faryab, Tahar, and many other provinces have been displaced inside Afghanistan. Most of them are in very dire condition, and they need urgent support by the government because most of them have even do not have access to shelter. Most of them are spending their nights and days on the roads inside big cities, mainly in the southern Kandahar and even in the city of Ghazni. I went to one of the places where tens of these internally displaced people had gathered in the Afghan capital, Kabul. There were a high number of internally displaced people who were the residents of Molestan district in Ghazni province of Afghanistan. They said that what we had expected from the Afghan security forces during battles again with the Taliban militants, that not happened. They say that the Afghan security forces did not resist against Taliban attacks due to the shortage of ammunition or many other issues. But in the meantime, they call the Afghan government to urgently conduct military operations in order to retake the districts like Manistan in order to pave the way for the villagers to go back to their villages and resume their lives.
Thank you for that. Amin Alami from Kabul. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has appointed a second Republican critic of Donald Trump, Representative Adam Kinzinger, to a special committee investigating the Capitol riot. Nancy Pelosi already put Representative Liz Cheney, Republican from Wyoming, on the select committee. Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger were among the 10 House Republicans to vote for Donald Trump's second impeachment, and the only two Republicans who voted recently to form the special committee. We now present you an article written by Martin Pengelly under the heading, Pelosi Puts Anti-Trump Republican Kinzinger on U.S. Capitol Attack Panel. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, has appointed a second anti-Trump Republican to the Select Committee, which will investigate the deadly 6th of January assault on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Asked if she would ask Adam Kinzinger of Illinois to join fellow Trump critic Liz Cheney of Wyoming on the panel, Nancy Pelosi told ABC's This Week program, "That would be my plan." Adam Kinzinger said he humbly accepted the appointment. The committee will meet soon to hear testimony from police officers who battled rioters on 6th of January. The hearing will take place amid high political drama. After the Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy named Jim Jordan and Jim Banks to the panel, Nancy Pelosi rejected them as prominent allies of Donald Trump, the subject of the committee's work. Kevin McCarthy then withdrew Republican support, leaving in place only Liz Cheney, a pariah in her own party. Kevin McCarthy was widely criticized. James Carville, a veteran Democratic strategist, went so far as to call him a pathetic blob of protoplasm in thrall to Donald Trump. Nancy Pelosi said Adam Kinzinger and other Republicans have expressed an interest to serve on the Select Committee, and I wanted to appoint three of them that leader Kevin McCarthy suggested, but he withdrew their names. The two that I would not appoint are people who would jeopardize the integrity of the investigation, and there is no way I would tolerate their antiques as we seek the truth. Asked about Republican charges that her rejection of Jim Jordan and Jim Banks worsened political divisions, Nancy Pelosi said, "This was not just any day of the week. This was a constitutionally required day of action for Congress." She said, "The Republicans will say what they will say. Our Select Committee will seek the truth. It's our patriotic duty to do so. Maybe the Republicans can't handle the truth, but we have a responsibility to seek it, to find it, and in a way that retains the confidence of the American people." Speaking to Fox News Channel on Sunday, Jim Banks from Indiana said, "It's clear that Nancy Pelosi only wants members on this committee who will stick to her talking points and stick to her narrative. That's why she's picked the group that she's already picked, and anyone who she asks to be on this committee from this point moving forward will be stuck to her narrative, to her point of view. There won't be another side." Jim Banks repeatedly claimed he and Jim Jordan were only concerned with finding out why security failed at the Capitol building on 6th of January. Congress was attacked by Trump supporters, told by then-president to fight like hell to overturn his election defeat. Later that day, after rioters died and police officers were injured, whilst protesters looked for lawmakers to capture and kill, Jim Banks and Jim Jordan went ahead with objections to results from Arizona and Pennsylvania. Donald Trump's lie that his defeat by Joe Biden was the result of electoral fraud has been repeatedly debunked and thrown out of court. On Fox News Channel on Sunday, Jim Banks was not asked about those claims, his support for them, or how they fueled the Capitol attack. In a statement, Republican Adam Kinzinger said he would bring great patriotism to the committee's mission, to find the facts and protect our democracy. Adam Kinzinger noted, "For months, lies and conspiracy theories have been spread, threatening our self-governance. For months, I have said that the American people deserve transparency and truth on how and why thousands showed up to attack our democracy." He added, "I will work diligently to ensure we get to the truth and hold those responsible for the attack fully accountable." Elsewhere, Republican senator who voted to impeach Donald Trump over a Capitol attack and also backed an independent commission to investigate it repeated the talking point used by Jim Banks, that Democrats want the House committee to drive a political message. Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania told CNN's State of the Union program, "I think people do want to get to the bottom of 6th of January. Yes, I did support the Senate version of a commission that would have been genuinely and truly bipartisan, both in its composition of members and in staff, which I think is important." Republicans in the Senate blocked that. Pat Toomey said, "But this exercise in the House was not meant to be that. We have a lot of investigations underway now. There are Senate committees that have completed. There are others still in progress. We have many criminal investigations." Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania, added, "I would favor a truly bipartisan commission, but I think that we should be candid about the fact that it is politically to the advantage of Democrats to try to keep this issue in the forefront. James Carville has been very candid about this. He's urged the Democrats, don't let the election be about Joe Biden and his policies in 2022. Make that midterm election about 6th of January and Donald Trump." He said, "And so it's very clear that Democrats have an incentive to try to drive a political message here, and a purely partisan commission in the House is probably going to do that." Speaking on MSNBC's This Week program, Carville called Kevin McCarthy a pathetic glob of protoplasm, panicked out of his mind on 6th of January, calling the president begging for help. "He refuses to have the bipartisan committee. Now he's doing this. The guy has no sense of shame." Pat Toomey was asked if refusing to support a committee to investigate the actions of supporters of a Republican president might reflect badly on the Republican Party. He said, "No, I think it is a constant reminder about a terrible episode in our history, which Donald Trump was at the heart of." But he said, "The policies of the current president and the damage that he's going to be doing, that's what we should be debating in 2022. But you know, I'm not sure that's what the Democrats want to be talking about."
Economic divide.
It's called big tech, and they wield a lot of influence and power, not to mention that they have a lot of money. They are household names in which we use their services every day. But they also have a dark side to them. They are using their power to eliminate competition. Hi, I'm Kamit Ahli. In today's program, we're going to take a look at the dark side of big tech. Coming up in today's program, first, the big tech companies that we will take a look at. Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. We'll also take a look at Microsoft. There are other ones, but these four are under our radar in today's program. Then we're going to move on to the consequences of big tech. One of them is what's called market manipulation. That is one of the consequences of the way that big tech is holding power, which leads to total control. As mentioned, market manipulation is one of them. Also, crushing competition. Just a couple things that they're guilty of due to the immense power that they hold. How can they be stopped? Can they be controlled? And finally, it's not just the tech sector. Monopolies are all over the world. worldwide, 10 corporations, if you can believe that, 10 corporations only, control almost all large food and beverage brands.
The push to break up big tech, big tech companies, Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, and before that, Microsoft. There's a feeling that these tech giants are too powerful. But they're also really good for consumers. Big tech has, in some sense, gotten too big, and U.S. politicians are starting to listen. Like former President Donald Trump, the U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, and even the current President Joe Biden.
In conjunction with the America First Policy Institute, I'm filing as the lead class representative a major class action lawsuit against the big tech giants, including Facebook, Google, and Twitter, as well as their CEOs, Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, and Jack Dorsey. Three real nice guys.
One of these five, Microsoft, was the subject of lawsuits. Another, Google, has been hit by European antitrust regulators for major fines.
Now, for the first time in over a decade, internet users in Europe will have an effective and unbiased choice between Microsoft's Internet Explorer and competing web browsers such as Mozilla, Firefox, Google Chrome, Apple Safari, and Opera.
For starters, big tech companies have been pressuring suppliers and competitors. The tactics have been cruel and inhumane. Some examples: Amazon's price wars against competitors, Apple's management of its own app store, and Facebook's privacy scandals.
The story of big tech is incredible when you take a look at the numbers behind these giant conglomerates, from revenues to market share and to staff. You would think that they have been around for a long time, but nothing could be further than that. It's incredible to realize that the likes of Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon have been around only for 25 years. Now, before that, they did not exist. And before they came into the picture, Microsoft was there. It happened in the 1990s when it entered the market. It was the technology giant at the time, gobbling up huge market share, and like big tech, crushing competition as a result. Its dominance was in computer operating systems. The U.S. federal government sued Microsoft for violating anti-monopoly laws and reached a settlement, which then paved the way for internet companies like Google and Facebook. Now, joining us in this edition of the first Q&A is Kristen Harris. He's the host of a radio show called The Rundown Live. He's also a journalist and researcher and is based out of Milwaukee. Okay, Kristen, welcome. Four technology companies, mainly Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, are known as big tech. We also talk about Microsoft, and they have created monopolies that is said to control the internet for personal uses like we use for shopping. Now, there's public concern about the power of these big tech companies, that they are manipulating markets and they're crushing competition, which has very much driven the world to be very concerned about this power. How are they driving out and crushing competition, do you think?
Well, I think one of the benefits of the internet is that they can offer technology at a lower price because they cut out the middleman, per se, in a lot of ways. And the process and way people get their products from the internet, such as you mentioned Amazon, people can now go on Amazon.com and find anything, any variety or collection of the product, as where you're very limited in the brick and mortar store. And with COVID-19 being such a big influencer and the shutting down of businesses, it's really pushed and giving more wealth into these giant online businesses. Now, with the internet, anyone could create a business, but you may not be able to offer the price because Amazon has such large purchasing powers. A lot of times, these monopolies and cartels are not really the creation of the market, but by the government. For example, like in media is generally owned by four or five major corporations, but I can't file and get a radio station license. I have to just start a radio station or start a television station. I need to get approval by the federal government. So when it comes to these issues, a lot of times government is the problem with monopolies. They're the ones that sanction it.
It's time now for our InfoNews section, where we take a look at other economic news from around the world. Now, for our first item, we're going to go to China. We're going to take a look at the smartphone news that came out of China, and it regards Xiaomi. China's Xiaomi has overtaken Apple, so it shows that it's gained market share over Apple. It's become the second biggest smartphone producer to have beaten Apple by 3% in global shipments. Now, Samsung has the number one spot. Xiaomi has the second spot with 7% share. Number one, Samsung with 19%, and Apple to have come in third with 14% share of the market. Now, moving on to digital currencies, the U.S. seems to have a plan. The U.S. Fed has made an announcement. It said that there is a token that would eliminate Bitcoin. That obviously is something that, for the currency market, digital currency market, is something to worry about. Jerome Powell has made that announcement that if the U.S. established a central bank digital token, there would be no need for Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. Cuba, next item, protests that have happened there. They have come out protesting harsh economic conditions due to the U.S., who has had an embargo on Cuba for decades now. Now, the U.S. sanctions has actually cost Cuba quite a bit of money. $800 billion is what some estimates have put it at. And our final item, COVID-19 inequality. The pandemic is still making the situation worse. Especially when it comes to this data, top CEOs to make nearly 300 times more money than the average employees. The Americans for Tax Fairness is saying that we can raise some $4 trillion for vital public services simply by ensuring the rich and corporations begin paying their fair share of taxes. Okay, it's time for a quick break here on Economic Divide. Let's stay right where we are. We'll be right back. It's time now for our in-depth section. Now, in this section today, we're going to feature former U.S. presidential candidate and avid anti-big tech opponent Elizabeth Warren. She was so against them that during the presidential campaign of 2020, it was one of her items which constituted her platform. Now, here she is describing what she wants to do towards the breakup of big tech.
Because that opportunity to do what you do best, to come up with a great idea, to work your heart out to make it happen, to be able to compete on a level playing field, is taken away by these platform giants. So my view is break those things apart, and we will have a much more competitive, robust market in America. That's how capitalism should work.
Okay. Well, there was also another very important feature to her proposal for the breakup of big tech.
We have to think about competitive markets. That's what my announcement yesterday, my proposal is now, about protecting competitive markets by breaking these giants up.
So strong is her anti-big tech stance there, calling for the breakup of big tech. Now, the heart of her stance is the following. She is saying that promoting competition is very important. It allows new, groundbreaking companies to grow and to thrive. As a result, that pushes everyone in the marketplace to offer better products and to offer better services. She actually posed a question that kind of put things into perspective. And that question is, aren't we all glad that we have the option of using Google instead of being stuck with Bing? Something to think about. Well, according to Team Warren, central to your government is the idea that although consolidation might not have raised prices for certain online services, well, it has helped depress wages, that's one of them, inflate executive pay, that's another consequence of this. So those are two very important ones, depressing wages and inflating executive pay. And also stifles the rise of new businesses. Well, she then goes on to relate that to America's middle class and wealth inequality, two problems that the U.S. has been experiencing for quite some time. She says that this, in turn, has contributed to the decline of middle class financial security, giving it a rise of income and wealth inequality. So you have these four big tech companies to bring about these four consequences here, or these consequences here. Middle class decline, leading to wealth inequality, and then destroying innovation and companies' startups. Left unchecked, she says concentration will destroy, as I mentioned here, innovation, small companies, and startups. When you take a look at what's happening regarding this, all of this needs to be dissected. So let's bring in Robert Bridge. Robert Bridge is a journalist and political observer. He's also the author of Midnight in the American Empire, How Corporations and Their Political Servants Are Destroying the American Dream, in terms of the book that he has written. Okay, so taking a look at what big tech is doing, you have the destruction of competition or the stifling of competition. You have things that big tech is being accused of, even though they are actually responsible for the creation of jobs. But in terms of the bigger picture, please break this down for us, whether it's good or not, and how they are guilty, especially the way that Elizabeth Warren, the U.S. Senator, has said, so much so that she says that they need to be broken up.
I'd say there is a lot of truth to that. On the one hand, you know, you have the small innovators who, you know, out of their garage or whatever quaint story there may be, they come up with some kind of new technology, new app or whatever. Like, for example, the way Apple computers were invented, for example, Steve Jobs and that whole quaint story. And then what happens is nowadays that these big companies, they just continue to buy up all of these small innovations, small companies, and they bring them all under one umbrella. And although that could be seen as a positive on the one hand, it could stifle growth, it could stifle innovation. They buy out these companies. On the other hand, there's another aspect of it all, that executive pay. I think this is really where the concern is, you know, back in the 1980s, for example, executive pay outpaced the pay of workers by 50 times. And nowadays, that same margin is about close to 200 times greater than the pay of the average worker. So you have that aspect of it. And if you look at, like, for example, what's happening not only in California and Silicon Valley, you have huge amounts of people. You know, it's something that they're trying to conceal, but around Silicon Valley, San Francisco, all these once really beautiful towns and cities, they're being overrun with tent cities, homeless people living out of their cars. You know, San Francisco was once one of the most beautiful cities in the country. Now there are areas of it, many areas of it, that you can't walk down. They got hypodermic needles on the ground and human feces and just everything, and it's unimaginable.
All right, time now for our 101 in this segment. Robert Bridge is a journalist and political observer who rejoins us, along with Kristen Harris, who's host of the radio show The Rundown Live. Well, Kristen Harris, let me start with you. The argument is that big tech companies have too much power. They have too much power, it is said, over the economy, over the society, even say over democracy, at least in the U.S. They've bulldozed competition. They have used private information for profit. They have tilted the playing field, so to speak, against, it seems like, everyone else. But isn't that the case with other industries also? For example, worldwide, there are 10 corporations that's been proven to control almost all large food and beverage brands. That means that these 10 brands control a large portion of the products of the 7.7 billion consumers that the world buys.
Well, again, we're talking, first of all, when we're talking about food, we're talking government regulation that is going to consolidate the amount of people that can have food and competition that there is in the market, because you need to get approval from the FDA. Not saying that our food shouldn't be safe. I'm saying that they can be selective to their lobbyist business partners if they so choose. In the form of social engineering and social media, I think it's a big misconception that these platforms that are free, you know, like Facebook or Twitter, that we actually pay them in a form called metadata. If you haven't been noticing, metadata is the new liquid gold. In all reality, we've been paying with our information, our data. and giving it to them for free while they've been giving us less and less reach as a result. I think freedom of reach is a big thing here in America. The United States has been working hard. The Biden administration is calling, or people from the DNC are calling on the Biden administration to actually, politically correct our text messages. They want to review our text messages. Not only that, the government is working with social media to decide what should be censored and what shouldn't be. Since when is it the government's job to censor and dictate what news the American people can have? It's always the government that seems to be the issue. And the internet, that's why they want to regulate the internet so bad, is so they can control the social engineering. Like I mentioned before, government is the main cause of the monopolies. They're the ones that you have to go and get a federal license to broadcast radio or television on, and they decide who can and who cannot and what information gets out there. The internet is the last form of free market where we can have digital broadcasting, where we can get information out there, and they're salivating, waiting to control that information, because what they want from you is not for you to be a self-thinking, free-thinking individual. They want to control you from the minute that you wake up till you go to bed, so that you buy and purchase the items that they want you to, that they subliminally put in through symbolism, through information, through advertising, through what you see. And they even want to control your thoughts now, saying that you cannot have freedom of thought, that you must think a certain way. So what we're seeing is Silicon Valley using their muscle in collaboration with the current administration to try to social engineer a nation's viewpoint on what is correct and what is not. And there's absolutely an issue there. It's not freedom of speech, it's freedom of reach. So what's the point of having speech if what you say doesn't reach anyone? That's where we're going with a lot of this. And we need to be aware that this is happening, because this isn't just happening in the United States. This is a global phenomenon. If you've ever looked at anything like Google Jigsaw, where they say that they're trying to root out misinformation against an open society. What does open society mean? Well, George Soros described open society at Davos 2017 as global mafia state. I don't know what that means. His words, not mine. But if you're against the open society or global mafia state, then they're going to censor what you say. What it is they're coming after your freedom of speech, not just in the United States, but worldwide, because they're trying to force us into some kind of fully automated luxury communist future that majority of Americans who believe in the freedom of speech, your constitutional rights, would not approve of. But they want to condition us through education, through social media, through what we purchase, through Hollywood, into believing in a certain narrative. And if you don't accept that collectivist view and you want to be an individual, you are the problem.
Wow, interesting thoughts there. Well, Robert Bridge, let me see if you agree with that. I mean, basically, what I'm gathering from what our guest there, Kristen Harris, has stated, is that it's all about control. And that is what monopolies actually do. They are controlling the market. They very big in the wealth that they accumulate, and then through their subsidiaries or through their corporations, to control the market. The way that our guests talked about how the data on each person is collected in order to have people, when they wake up, start buying their products at any time that they can. So it's all about that. And of course, when we talk about the global scene, you have, for example, the 10 brands that I mentioned that control a large portion of the products that 7.7 billion consumers in the world buys. Do you see it that way?
I think when you're comparing the food supply versus the information supply, so to speak, you're comparing apples and oranges there. Although it is disconcerting that only 10 companies, maybe less, control all of the food brands in the world. You know, that's actually quite dangerous, and we're seeing that right now as some parts of the food supply chain are starting to break. You have, for example, that one incident where the China got stuck in the straits, and that just cut off a huge part of the food supply, the global food chain right there. So when you're talking about information, social media, and things like that, that's become like the new town hall, as they call it. This is where people get together and they discuss ideas now. They no longer really meet together at the local church or places like that. They meet together electronically, And when you have only a handful, you know, Google, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, controlling this space, then it's, of course, extremely dangerous. And we saw that with, although many people, of course, don't like Donald Trump and they think that he deserves everything he gets, he was completely barred from all social media. So if it can happen to a person like him, an ex-president, then it can really happen to anybody. And now they're even talking about, you know, tracing people. For example, there's just a news story out that they want to, the Biden administration, aside from just wanting to go door to door and trying to get people to accept a vaccine, not that there's any problem with that, but some people would look at that as an invasion of their privacy. They also want to start monitoring people's SMS messages. And if anybody is expressing any doubts, for example, about getting the vaccine, then they're going to start, this is the idea anyways, they're going to start putting fact checkers on there and fact checking people's actual personal communications between other people. So that is, of course, extremely disturbing. And it just shows that the power of these companies to influence the conversation, to shut down the conversation. If they don't like what you're saying on Twitter, I've seen this multiple times, especially people who voice opinions on the right. If their opinions go against the left-wing ideology, then quite often these people are just completely disappeared. they're banned. So they just literally disappear. Like, for example, Alex Jones. He was a very controversial personality, media host, and he literally disappeared. Unless people actually hunt him down on his own website, you don't see him anymore. So this is happening everywhere.
Say that big tech has stifled competition. Well, it has. It has taken away creativity. That is also true. And it has been responsible for the closure of many mom and pop stores. That is a whole nother story. However, if you were to weigh, let's say, the positives versus the negatives, well, the verdict is out on whether it should be broken up, as the U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren has stated. But if people like her are calling for the breakup of this monopoly, then why don't they call for the breakup of other monopolies that exist in the U.S. in a whole variety of industries, from clothing to you name it? Because this not only goes against the grains of capitalism, you also have many powerful families with ties to politicians, which makes this an impossibility. The answer? Use big tech to your advantage and beat them at what they're doing. That does it for this edition of the program. Your questions and comments are always welcome. For me, Kavita Akhli, it's goodbye until next time.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.